Thanks for listening to the Best of the Odd Couple podcast. Be sure to catch us live every weekday from 7 p.m. to 10 p.m. Eastern, 4 to 7 Pacific on Fox Sports Radio. Find your local station for The Odd Couple at foxsportsradio.com or stream us live every day on the iHeartRadio app by searching FSR.
You're listening to The Best of The Odd Couple with Chris Broussard and Rob Parker.
All right, let's bring in the 7-time NBA All-Star Basketball Hall of Famer.
One of my favorite people.
And one of the an owner with the Atlanta Hawks. None other than the
money.
Great Grant Hill. Grant, what's happening, man? Welcome to the
what's
iCouple.
Up?
Hey, what's going on, fellas? I appreciate y'all.
Nah, it's great.
Y'all some OGs in this game, man. Y'all been around for a while.
You already know.
I
know.
Rob is really a real OG.
But you know what's crazy, Grant? As years go by and stuff, you know, you remember when guys get drafted and, you know, like, and players or, you know, I just can't get over it sometimes. And then you start to meet their sons who are playing and stuff. You know what I mean? It's crazy.
No question.
No, I mean, I played with guys, and now, like you said, now their kids are in the league.
Right.
And it's like, what happened? Right. Where did the time go?
Hey, Grant, but, you know, the Rockets are complaining about the officiating and from game one, and we all know. But the only thing I'm going to say is, in the NBA playoffs, don't we kind of know that the officials want you to make shots and aren't looking to bail people out? And I just think Harden is looking for bailouts when he just needs to try to make shots. Is that crazy?
No, I mean, I think you're right. I mean, I think it's posturing, a little bit of gamesmanship. I mean, we've seen it before where, you know, in years past, players will, at the press conference, talk about the officiating. We've seen coaches sort of go off, maybe take a fine. I'm not sure if that works or not, but I think there is a little bit of a change from regular season to postseason. And even in this new era where, you know, the game is less physical than maybe it was 25, 30 years ago. So, you know, I mean, the key, I think the interesting thing, at least in that last game, was that the officials were pretty consistent. You know, they were particularly on those shots of his and sort of, you know, the idea of getting fouled as he was landing. Yeah, they weren't calling it at all. And so, you know, great players adapt and adjust, and I think he'll adapt and adjust as well. And, you know, he'll figure it out. He didn't quite figure it out in that last game, and maybe that was an excuse or not, but you know, he's more than capable of going off, as we've seen plenty of times before in game two.
Grant, the league issued this 2-minute report, and they said that last shot where he took the 3-pointer that could have tied it was not a foul. It was a good 9 call. There are a few other things.
They said Steph Curry should
have fouled out with like a minute 10 left, and then again with like 5 seconds left. How do you feel about the 2-minute report? I've talked to some officials who really feel like it just throws them under the bus, especially when nothing changes.
Right.
What's your feeling on it?
Yeah, man. Look, I think it's definitely something that, for me, as a fan and as a former player, it's something that takes a minute to get used to. But I mean, I think the league is trying to be transparent,
right?
And you know, in lieu of what's happened in the past, and you know, obviously with the scandal, Tim Donaghy, I think, you know, trying to be transparent, trying to, you know, admit its faults, and obviously the replay center, they go on social media now and they'll replay certain calls that are questionable or calls that have been reviewed. So I think it's an effort on their part. You know, it doesn't change anything, like you said. but I don't know, maybe there's a peace of mind for, you know, diehard fans to know, you know what, hey, they got it right, they got it wrong. So I understand where they're coming from. I don't know if it's necessary, but
it is good for the transparency because, you know, the NBA more than any other league is people throw out these conspiracy theories all the time. And so, like you said, that's what they're trying to combat.
Yeah, I mean, look, the one thing you can't have is people questioning the integrity, you know, and you know, obviously with the officiating. And so that was pretty damaging when it happened before. And so they're taking measures to try to clean, you know, at least be open and honest and you know, let the fans know. And, you know, when they get it wrong, they get it wrong. I think it puts the onus on the officials now. And now, you know, their mistakes are, you know, sort of what before might have been kept quiet, at least amongst the officiating crews, now is for the whole public to know. So, you know, I can certainly see why they don't want that or like that, but, you know, it is what it is, and, you know, the good thing is that for the most part, I think we have some really good officials, particularly as we get later and later in the postseason.
Grant, some people criticize Toronto. Why would you get Kawhi Leonard? He's not going to stay there. He wants to go to L.A. This is why you go get him, because this guy is that good, can get you, maybe get you to the finals, maybe even win you a finals. Just talk about Kawhi's play. I mean, that game one performance was tremendous.
You know, game one performance was amazing. You know what's amazing about him, Rob? Like he's like gotten better every year. I mean, you know, you see his play now, but you know, when he first came in, he was a defensive player. You know, he was a guy that was raw. You know, a guy that, you know, had potential. Obviously, Pop was very high on him. R.C. Buford, that whole camp down there, but just the improvement, his shooting, you saw that in the finals there in 2014 where he, you know, his finals MVP, his ball handling now, like his ability with the ball and get to his spots and, you know, all he didn't have that 4 or 5 years ago. And so, yeah, he just plays at a nice tempo, nice easy pace, always under control, gets his shot, you know, has great confidence, and is a two-way player, you know, one of the best on both ends of the floor. So, I'm not mad at that gamble. That's a hell of a gamble that Toronto made. And as you said, right now, this is why they made it. Of course, for them, you know, they have to advance. They have to get to the finals for a lot of reasons. But you know, I think you know, you get an opportunity a year to try to, you know, show him what you're about, what your culture's about. You know, what it's like to play in that market, and, you know, and hope for the best. I mean, I think, you know, we saw Paul George resign. I don't think anybody thought Paul George was going to resign in OKC last year. It was a foregone conclusion that he would go on to L.A., and he stayed. And so we'll see what happens. But, you know, I'm not mad at Masai for making that risk, that risk.
And Kawhi has the best laugh in the NBA.
Yes. You know, my thing is, I don't know if it's the best laugh or if it's just so unexpected. Like, you just.
You know, it was, you know, frightening. It was frightening, Grant. It was kind of like he never laughed before.
And you know what? We can't exactly. We can't get enough of it. We will play that 8 times a show if we can. I mean, wow.
I love it.
Grant, you were a guy in your early years in Detroit where, you know, you didn't get that close to a triple-double, but you put up numbers in all three, you know, points, rebounds, assists categories that we really hadn't seen a lot of at that point. And Russell Westbrook obviously has averaged a triple-double the last 3 years. A lot of people now are looking down on his triple-doubles because, you know, they haven't advanced past the first round in any of these three seasons. Do you feel that way? Like maybe the triple-double average is a little overrated, or do you think people really don't understand how much it takes for a player to do that over the course of a season?
Yeah, I mean, I think it's a little bit of both. I mean, I think it's incredibly hard, and certainly, you know, what he's done the last 2 years in the regular season to have the energy and the stamina, and to just be able to deliver in all those categories is really remarkable. And also, you know, they're not a team that, you know, a lights out shooting team from the perimeter. So it's not like he has, you know, his shooters surrounding him, and there's some difficult triple doubles on his part. You know, the criticism, as you said, was in part, though, for, you know, just the fact that they haven't done one in the postseason, and at least as well as that they've expected, and as that they are accustomed to there in OKC. You know, you question. I mean, I think some of his decision making, some of the shots he took, you know, the style of play, maybe his, you know, too much responsibility is something that may have hurt them a little bit in the postseason, but. You know, it's tough. I mean, he does so much. I also think, you know, teams have the benefit of really zeroing in and preparing for you. You know, during the regular season, you know, you got a day or two or what have you to prepare, and then you're on to the next team. But now in a playoff series, you really have, you know, you have almost a whole week to really prepare and then make adjustments in the, you know, in the series. And, you know, I thought Portland did a fantastic job. They had a game plan. They kind of let him shoot from the – kept him out of the paint. It really kind of frustrated him. And when he's not going, because he has to do so much, and obviously Paul George was hurting and not maybe at his best, then that team suffers. And so that's what happens when you rely so much on one guy, and he was unable to play at that level, and they were unable to advance.
It's the iCouple. We're joined by Hall of Famer Grant Hill. Grant, you're also doing some things with the Choices Matter campaign. Can you tell us about that?
Yeah, no, definitely. I mean, as you guys know, I had a gang of surgeries during my career, 11 to be exact. And, you know, obviously now there's a real issue with, prescription drugs, and we're over-prescribing, pills to people, and there's a bit of an epidemic, and there is an epidemic now with painkillers. And, you know, I was exposed to a lot of painkillers, a lot of medications. And so, you know, thankfully never had any issues or any, situations where I became addicted, but certainly very much aware of the problems and the challenges. And so, Pacira has this Choices Matter campaign, and believe it or not, there's a recovery, a solution that is opioid free. And so I actually did that my last surgery when I was in LA with the Clippers. And was able to take this sort of block on my leg that lasted for about 4 days. And when I got off that, the pain had subsided. And
wow.
So I went through the whole sort of recovery process without taking any pain medication. And so that was pretty remarkable. So, you know, it's a great campaign, and just making people aware. People, you know, letting people know if you're considering surgery, that you have another option. And you can go to your doctor and talk about your pain management, including a non-opioid, procedure. So I'm grateful for it, and I just want to spread the message, and appreciate you guys giving me the opportunity to talk about it.
No doubt.
All right, Grant, thanks a lot, man. We appreciate it, and we know you'll be enjoying these playoffs like we are.
Hey, I appreciate y'all, OG and Triple OG.
Just because I've been covering the league since 87, is that it? I'm Triple OG, I guess.
Oh, man. Yeah. You've been around the league longer than me.
Crazy, yep. Right? I know.
No question.
So crazy. But
no
you know question. What, Grant?
Love it every minute of it.
You know
love
it.
Love you guys. Be
yep.
good.
All right,
thanks,
Grant,
buddy.
Thanks.
Be sure to catch live editions of The Odd Couple with Chris Broussard and Rob Parker. Weekdays at 7 p.m. Eastern, 4 p.m. Pacific on Fox Sports Radio and the iHeartRadio app.
You don't win the mythical title of best player in the world in the regular season. You do it in the playoffs, and we're watching, and I think a number of guys are vying for it. I think Kawhi Leonard is in the hunt. I would have said Steph even a week or two ago, but, you know, he's not playing like that. And now KD, of course. And James Harden, although I don't think Harden is better than KD, and Giannis is the other guy that's in the running, and he's off to a rough start in their series with Boston. The front runner by far for the mythical title of best player in the world is Kevin Durant. He is balling lights out over the last five games, really since it looked like Patrick Beverley locked him up. And a lot of people were critical of KD. I like to think he heard my quote. And that's what set him off.
You think so?
More so than Steve Kerr saying, go out and take 20 to 30 shots. Me saying, Patrick Beverley put him on blast. And KD needs to snatch the title and show everybody I'm the best player in the world.
So now you're motivated, too. You're
yeah.
motivating NBA players.
Because he does. Listen, he'll text me when he doesn't like something I said.
Does he?
Yeah. maybe he heard me. But whatever the case, he is balling out of his mind since that game two when Beverly did a great job on him and he had more turnovers, eight. He's averaged 40 points a game.
When I come out with my Masoch shirts, can you make sure he gets one? I want to hear from Kevin Durant. You think
yeah, I'll try to get him one.
I
yes.
want to get him one.
Just, yes.
I think he'll appreciate that.
Yes.
It's too soon,
I don't know
bro.
If he'll appreciate it. But, you can
but
give
he's
it
been
to
balling,
him.
Though.
You can
come
give
on.
It to him.
He has been balling.
He's been balling, and he is clearly, like I said, the front runner to just be the best player in the world. Let's hear Steve Kerr even. I don't know if we can say Steve Kerr compared him to Michael
no,
Jordan
it's just the
because
run,
he was asked the
he's
question.
He's talking about the run that he's on, not
but
like.
But even the way he's like, I don't even know if it's because the context was Kerr was asked, have you ever seen anything like this? And of course, He played with Michael Jordan.
Come on.
I don't know if the reporter was a young whippersnapper or what.
Hello.
Right.
You ever see that shot I made to win the game? You ever see that shot? That was me.
Here's the exchange.
Have you ever seen anybody have a great four-game stretch like Kevin is having?
There's this guy named Michael something. Can't remember his last name. Kevin's run these last couple weeks. It's just been off the charts. I've said it a few times this week. I mean, he's the most skilled basketball player on earth. He's one of the most skilled basketball players to ever play the game. There's never been anybody like him. 6'11", you know, handles ball, shoots threes, passes, defends. He's just an unbelievable talent. And I think after we lost game two to the Clippers, I think he just felt like he just had to turn it up and lift us up another level, and that's exactly what he's done.
Here's what I'm going to say, Rob. I have said that Kevin Durant, if they win the title this year, ideally would stay in Golden State one more season and go for four straight, which no one since Bill Russell has done. Not Michael, not Magic, not Kobe, not LeBron, none of those guys. Kobe, Shaq, whoever. Here's the problem with that. Number one, I think the team is too mentally fatigued and taxed to win it for a fourth straight year if they win it this year.
I don't disagree with you. I think that's taking a toll on them.
Yes. And the second thing is, even if he won the fourth straight ring, it would also be four straight for the guy who's really viewed as the heart and soul of that team, even if he's not the best player on there, which is KD, is Steph. Steph would have won four straight too, and Steph would have won 5 in 6 years. And I don't think KD, as great as he is, would get the full credit he deserves. Now, he would get love. He gets love now. He got love when he hit those two game, you know, the game winner over LeBron, and he became the finals MVP. So he gets love. But this is my point, Rob. This, what Kevin Durant is doing right now, how well he's playing, I told you the numbers, 40 points a game, 35 points a game in the playoffs, 40 points in the last five, 50 against the Clippers, 45 the game before against the Clippers. This is telling me more than ever why he needs to leave Golden State after this season and go to either New York or the Clippers. I think it's going to be New York, because he will not get his just due. He won't get 100% of the love and credit he should get until he does it somewhere else, because there's always that yeah, but of either you join this great team already and they won it without you, or you also still have Steph Curry and Klay Thompson and Draymond Green. And just the fact that even though they may not be playing at the height of their game, the defense really has to pay so much attention to them that it makes it a little easier for you. So I just think for him to get all the recognition he deserves as the best player in the world, he needs to go elsewhere and lead that team to the cusp of the title.
I don't disagree with you. I think that there is something about that. The same way I believe that Kobe helped to engineer Shaq out of L.A., I do, because he felt the same exact way, that he'll never get
the full credit.
Had he just had those three championships with Shaq and he never won again, or he stayed with Shaq and maybe they won again or something and Shaq stayed, that would have been an issue for him. And I think it was Kobe realized, I got to do my own thing.
Right.
And once I do that, people can look at me and say, hey, I won championship too without Shaq. I think that's very important, the way people look at you, and I think that that's the case with Kevin Durant, only because they had won. Had they had never won before he got there, it would be totally different.
No question.
But because they had won and been to two in a row when he got there, changes everything.
And as great as he is, look, Oklahoma was a great team, and we know they had the Warriors on the ropes, up 3-1.
They choked. They were up 3-1, they choked.
But they didn't deliver. And that, so even though we know how great Kevin Durant is, we have yet to see him deliver. He's the best player on this team, but they're so good and so talented that it's kind of hard to say he's leading them to the championship. Because they have so much talent, and again, they did it without him. If he goes to New York, right, this is what I want to ask you. Let's say hypothetically they win it this year, and then he goes to New York with Kyrie. Say they get Zion or Anthony Davis or whatever.
Right, whatever. They loaded.
And I'm not going to even say they win it next year because that might just be
too much.
Let's
say they go to the finals.
Say they get to the finals, but say the following year, his second year there, they win it. What does that do for his legacy?
No, that would put it through the roof. People would have to look at him and consider him one of the greatest of all time in that.
I think he probably definitely is in the top 10. Like, he's right there around the top 10 already.
But I'm saying it would be, you have to push it even further because he killed, LeBron had a drought that ended in Cleveland where they hadn't won a championship. The Knicks haven't won anything since 1973. He would be.
And it's the Knicks, not the Cavs.
Exactly. It's just totally. I remember when Cecil Fielder was traded to the Yankees and they won the World Series in 1996. Cecil Fielder, remember, hit a lot of home runs, was a big-time star. Right. In baseball, and at one point was the highest paid player in the game. And he told me after he won, he said, there's nothing like winning in New York. He said he could, it's, you know what I mean? Winning in New York, he said, it changed his profile, he said he couldn't get over the difference once he put on the pinstripes compared to all the success he had in Detroit. Right. They had good teams, they didn't win a championship. But he told me that. And I still remember that Kevin Durant, for all that he had done in Golden State, this would trump that.
Everything in New York.
Am I right?
No question. Everything in New York is magnified, good or bad. Isaiah Thomas was not the worst GM in the history of the NBA, not by a long shot.
But being in New York and being bad.
He's viewed as that.
Yep.
Right? Jeremy Lin. Remember Lin Sanity for a month or 2 months, however long it
was on.
If he had done that in Sacramento or Milwaukee, he wouldn't have even been on people's radar.
He was on Sports Illustrated cover twice in like a week or 10 days. like Michael Jordan was never on.
Month.
It was like twice.
Right.
Like it was unbelievable how quickly he. And then I knew it was all over because I went into a Dick's Sporting Goods store and all of his stuff was 75% off. So I knew it was all done. But it didn't last long.
Let me ask you this. And keeping it within realistic things, because obviously you can say, well, he could win 4 more championships or whatever. But let's say he goes to New York, wins 1, maybe 2. Can he catch or surpass Kobe and or LeBron?
Oh, I think so. I really do. Those guys are definitely within reach.
Kobe for sure. We both have LeBron ranked ahead of Kobe, and I agree. Like he'll probably never be as iconic as LeBron because LeBron was a child prodigy and all that.
And he put up the numbers and he lived up to the hype. But if this guy wins a few more championships, turn that around, and then LeBron's last 3 years are bad in L.A.
That's true. There's another part of it,
Chris, where you. It's not that you take away what LeBron did, but it would diminish. You go, he came to L.A., boy, they were dogs. Say he made the playoffs only 2 out of the 4 times. They really didn't get anything going. Nobody else came to play with him. You go, and look at what KD. KD went to the Knicks that were awful, and he turned it around and won a championship. Now, obviously, he has help. But it would say a lot about KD.
No, I don't think he can control a game, KD in his prime, the way LeBron did in his prime. But his basketball ability, I said it today on The Herd, and I know it's an overstatement. It's an overstatement. But it's what I can think to say about him. He's darn near like the perfect basketball player. Because he's 7 feet tall, he can shoot as well as, he's one of what, maybe top 5, 10 shooters of all time.
No, he can handle the ball.
Can beat anybody off the dribble, finish at the rim.
You don't see players like that.
Shoot mid-range, defend. And he's a good passer. He's not LeBron James passing ability, but he can lead. You know, he can run a team, pass the ball. Like, there's nothing he can't do. I used to say it years ago, he is like a 7-foot version of Steph Curry. You know, it doesn't shoot it quite as well, but he's close. And the dude is unstoppable. And if he goes to New York and wins, even with a Kyrie Irving, because everybody needs some help, it would just send his legacy through the roof. And I'm sure, to be honest, that's what his agent is telling him, because his agent is trying to sell him on New York.
Right.
No, Rich Kleiman, he's from New York. He's a Knicks fan.
And it makes sense. He's telling him, dude. Here's what you want to get to that next level. here's what you do.
Right.
Because staying there, it's like he's not worn out as welcome. That's not the right term.
He just doesn't get as much credit as he deserves.
And at that point, like, there's nothing left here for you. You know, it's time to move on to the next town. And I think that his agent is really telling him what is right for him if he wants to. Now, if you just want to be comfortable staying in Silicon Valley and do that whole thing and open up the new arena and the team starts to go the other way and just hanging out, get out while it's still good.
Well, I think it's better to leave on top.
Yes.
Like after a championship, then you stay for an extra year, you don't win it. Now it's, you know what I mean? The ship be sinking, as Michael Ray Richardson once said.
I remember that.
Be sure to catch live editions of The Odd Couple with Chris Broussard and Rob Parker. Weekdays at 7 p.m. Eastern, 4 p.m. Pacific on Fox Sports Radio and the iHeartRadio app.
Golden State, of course, up 1-0 after a big win yesterday. And we talked earlier about how the Rockets are complaining about the officiating. But now, Rob, I want to go here. James Harden, who you and many others feel like was the MVP this year, he may win it. I think it's going to be Giannis. I voted for Giannis. I wouldn't be upset if Harden won it. He was tremendous.
It might be closer
season.
Than we think.
It should be close.
Yeah, because when they did that, a poll, who was it? Was it the Bleacher Report or did that poll with the players or at the Athletic? Remember, the players had Harden as the winner, not Giannis.
Right,
Was that
players,
Athletic?
The Athletic had
a poll.
Yeah, the players had Harden.
Right.
He may win it, you know, in there. They do their own little ceremony or banquet, too. So he could win that. So we'll see who wins. But he both of them are deserving. For me, I've been voting for the postseason or regular season awards for over 20 years. And this was one of the hardest that I can remember, one of the closest I can remember. But here's the deal. James Harden, for as great as he's been for many years, has struggled mightily at times in the NBA playoffs. In elimination games, he has been bad. So, had a few 2-for-11 games. And the thing I look at it, the 2-for-11, is you only took 11 shots. You're a guy that averages 30 points a game, and you're taking 11 shots in an elimination game. He's had games where he's had as many as 12 turnovers, maybe even a few more. Like,
just too
he's
sloppy.
Had some bad elimination games in the playoffs. And overall, his numbers typically drop drastically in the postseason. Like this year, his numbers in the playoffs have gone from, in the regular season, 36 points a game to 29 points a game. 7.5 assists, 7.7 assists in the postseason. So rebounds and assists are about the same, but his shooting percentage has dropped from 44% to 36% in the playoffs. So again, here are the drops. From 36 points, 44% shooting in the regular season to 29 points on 36% shooting in the playoffs. And if you look at Harden's stats on a yearly basis, Rob, they drop in the playoffs. And he has got to step it up in the postseason to be regarded as great a player as he really is. In the regular season, you win MVP awards. You become a Hall of Famer. To be an all-time great, to be an immortal, you need to deliver in the postseason. And I'm not saying you need to necessarily win a championship. Barkley's viewed as an all-time great. Allen Iverson, you know, other guys, Karl Malone, Stockton that didn't win championships. But they played well. They played either at their regular season level or they elevated. And Harden doesn't necessarily have to win the championship this year, but you got to be at your best.
But play like what people expected you to play and like you did in the regular season. And that hasn't been the case. Chris, too often, unfortunately, he's looking for calls. You know what I mean? Looking for contact. Dude, shoot your shot.
Yep.
They're not going to bail you out in the playoffs. How many times does this have to happen before you realize these calls aren't going to be made? And the referees are not going to be perfect. You don't want to leave it up to the referees to get a call anyway.
Right, right.
You'll have your feelings hurt if you're looking for calls. because they don't always come when you want them, and it doesn't matter about how big of a star you are. It just doesn't.
Right, and that's why he's such – so much of his success in the regular season is based on getting foul calls.
Right.
He tends to go to the line the last three seasons more than any other player in the league. And then, as your point said, in the regular season, they're not giving you those same calls. You're not getting to the line as much, and you're not producing as much. The other thing, Rob, and Chris Haynes brought it up the last hour, remember, in the playoffs, I'm not seeing you on a back-to-back. I'm not, you know, in the middle of a three games and five nights, four
There's
games
a big
and five nights stretch,
that.
Right? Where I didn't have time to really game. But I got a scouting report before the game. I look at it briefly. I glance over it. But in the playoffs, I am studying you to the nth degree. I know all your moves. I know what you want to do. And teams do that. And Chris made a great point. Chris Haynes from Yahoo, he said that because of the way Harden plays, it's ISO. So it's that much easier for a defense to just focus in on him. Whereas if you do it with a Kevin Durant or Steph Curry, they're constantly moving. They're running off screens. It's a lot more difficult to stop them because of that than it is for a guy that you know just going to come down, dribble it several times in front of you, maybe get a high screen and roll and try to stop him. So whatever the case, James Harden has got to start delivering in the playoffs. And this dates back, Rob, to when he was a youngster with the Oklahoma City Thunder. And didn't – remember they went to the finals against Miami. He didn't play well at all.
He was awful, but he was great up until that. If you remember, that dude made some big shots, Chris, leading up to that.
Yep.
And the finals, he was – I couldn't believe how bad he was in the finals.
And I gave him a pass. I'm going to be honest. I gave him a pass.
But you remember it.
Oh, yeah, I remember it. But I gave him a pass because he was so young. And I felt like, you know, he'll get it together. You know, his first time there, he's a young kid, was in, I don't know, third season, I believe. But it hasn't changed. He still has struggled. And whether it's nerves, whether it's fatigue, whatever the case, and I just don't – even yesterday when I think he finished with 35 points, he shot 4-for-16 from three. He didn't shoot well from the field.
It was ugly.
It was ugly. And James Harden has got to deliver. I know you were saying he was the best player in the world. I don't think you feel that way right now.
No, I just think that there has to be – and I'm not giving up on him because of
right.
one
no,
bad game.
Right, no, he's still
game.
A great player. That's, I mean, why, that's not –
right, you don't even know. Cause
that's
I've,
not
I've
up
seen,
for debate.
Right, I've seen him bounce back. My thing is he just has to be able to realize – you're not going to get those calls. Do not look for them. Look to make your shot.
Right, I agree.
He makes shots. I know he goes to the line too, Chris, but I'm talking about make your shots. That step back three, the stuff that he does, look to make a shot. I think if you look at that last shot, he wasn't really trying to make a shot.
He was trying
Am
to
I
get
right?
three free throws.
That's what
he was trying to do.
That's what I thought he
I
was.
I think that was part of their game.
Why you,
him
right.
and Chris Paul, all of them, like, they were shooting it. And, of course, you're trying to make it, but half of their mentality was let me draw the foul and get to the free throw line.
That's what I really thought. And I think sometimes you don't get that. Referees know when you're not, like, really shooting. They do.
Yep. And they're not going to bail you
am
out.
Am I right? No yeah. bailouts.
When you're – I mean, Chris Paul was lunging to his right on one shot to try to lunge into the defender. How you going to make that shot? I've seen one guy make off-balance threes like that. That's Steph Curry, who seems to be able to shoot it from any position. But most guys, you need to be somewhat square when you're shooting. And if you're constantly kicking your legs out trying to draw the foul, it can throw you off. Let me read some of these numbers to you, Rob. Shooting percentage for James Harden. This is the last 4 years in the postseason. In 2016, 41% from the floor, 31% from three. The year after that, 41% from the floor, 28% from three. Mm-hmm. The next year, 41% from the floor, 30% from three. This year, 36% from the floor, 33% from three. I mean, those are dramatic drops. And we know how important efficiency is in today's NBA. And even though he doesn't usually shoot a high percentage, just even in the regular season, he's around 44%. His number of free throws, and he's a good free throw shooter, and the number of three-pointers he hits makes him overall an efficient scorer.
Right.
But in the regular season, that goes out the window because you don't. He's not shooting well from three. Doesn't get to the line quite as much. So that's a problem for Harden and the Rockets.
No doubt about it. And I noticed some gamesmanship with the officials and trying to get them to start looking. And maybe, you know, if you whine enough, they might give you a couple of them. And it might matter. You know what right. I mean? If you get a three or something or two extra threes that you maybe didn't get fouled all the way or something, and they feel like, well, maybe we've been he's a star. He should get right. a couple more calls. Right. So you're trying to play that card. But the other part is he just has to ball out. And I'd rather him go down balling out rather than crying about the officials.
Yeah, it's not a good look.
It's not. And we don't want to spend time talking about the officials. That's not what the game's supposed to be about.
And on top of that, he went to the line 14 times.
So it wasn't like right. if he got four free throws, right. then you got a big beat.
You got 14 free throws. He's averaged 8 free throws a game in the postseason the last 2 years. So, he only averaged 11. He league leading 11 in the regular season. So
that's right.
That's a 14 free throws.
So why would you be
better?
It's a ton. Absolutely.